you got from it. Okay? So we're going to do a short relaxation, motivation, prayers. Then we're going to relaxation, and then we're going to do a review of yesterday. And I'll highlight the main points. And all you have to do is to bring to mind what we covered, just to make it fresh. Okay? We'll do it that way. So, imagine that perhaps you're at work or you're out and you want to do some sort of Buddhist practice. It could be anything. Still, doing some form of relaxation is very, very helpful mentally and physically. So you need to be in touch with one or two exercises that are done very quickly. And that's what we're going to practice here. So imagine, I don't know, you're in a queue at a supermarket and you see someone, two or three in front of you, that perhaps is having difficulties and you want to have a short compassion meditation. You're standing in the queue. So there's a few exercises you can do. A simple one is, as you're standing, just quieten, just quieten. And as you breathe out, just don't alter your breathing, just on your out-breath. Any tension, just let it flow away on the out-breath. Feeling your whole face relax. Your shoulders dropping. And keeping that level of relaxation, whatever it is. Noticing on the in-breath, your mind becoming bright. Naturally. And this can take a minute, no more. Still, you would set a motivation. So set a motivation now for the rest of the day. But if you're in that queue, you can set any motivation you like, but don't miss it out. So set a strong, positive motivation for today. What is it you want to achieve? Make it clear in your mind. And if you're in that queue at the supermarket and you know the four-line refuge prayer, say that. So we'll do the refuge prayer now. Sangye chodam soke chanam la janju bardu dagni kyapsu chi dagi jin soke pe sonam ki drola penchir sangye drupar sho sangye chodam soke chanam la janju bardu dagni kyapsu chi dagi jin soke pe sonam ki Rola Penchir Sangi Drupar Sho. Sangi
We seem to have lost Mary. Not quite sure why.
It automatically, it seemed to go mute.
Oh, okay.
Not to worry, it's done. Okay. So if we can get rid of the prayers. Okay, good. So another tried and tested method we'll do now is the two breath method. We've done this quite a few times, those of you who've listened to me before. This is another very quick way of relaxing the body. Relaxing the body. So in your own time, you take a deep breath through both nostrils. You let your belly fill. Hold it for a couple of seconds, then breathe out in a long out-breath with pursed lips like this. And in that long out-breath, simply let your whole body relax. Do that twice and then just breathe normally in your own time. So take your mind back to yesterday, the teachings. And we looked at the Tibetan word for meditation is gom. It's about making your mind familiar with positive attitudes and states of mind. It is far more than relaxation. Emptying the mind. There is a strong purpose in Tibetan meditation. The purpose is a gradual transformation of the mind by reducing negative, harmful aspects of mind and increasing positive, beneficial aspects of mind. In the Tibetan school, meditation is always positive, but it's not an end in itself. It is a vital tool to direct the mind towards achieving the goal, whatever goal you set out. It's a vital tool to calm the mind. It's quite different from secular meditation, which, very beneficial as it is aimed at this one lifetime, making this life better for you. And of course, that's wonderful, very beneficial. But it's not Buddhist meditation. The Buddhist meditation is really about benefiting all yourself and all living beings without exception. Until liberation or enlightenment is achieved. Reincarnation and beginningless and endless lifetimes is a given in Buddhism. With Buddhism, to work with the mind, we need a strong motivation. And so this meditation, this motivation, is really clearly linked around benefiting all sentient beings without exception. But it's possible to also have intermediate motivations, perhaps to benefit yourself in a difficult situation or benefit other people. Perhaps people in your family or friends who are having difficult problems, but always with the overarching wish to benefit all living beings. May they achieve liberation and enlightenment. And may I do this by myself alone. We looked deeply into why Buddhists meditate. And we compared it to secular meditation. And this is important because we think if we use the word meditation, everyone will know what we mean, and that's not true. And so some people meditate for short-term happiness. Buddhists see short-term happiness as temporary, limited, unsatisfactory, and above all, illusory. So Buddhists meditate for deep, lasting benefits of genuine happiness. It's good to de-stress and relax. But in Buddhism, the Dharma meditation is aiming towards developing your Buddha nature, developing your potential to achieve enlightenment. Most secular meditation, beneficial as it is really betting. It's a habitual betting on samsaric happiness. Buddhism is clear that this is an illusion. And so always looking towards liberation and enlightenment. Because of that, the definition really about making yourself familiar with positive states of mind is a given. Motivation becomes crucial. And so at the beginning of every Buddhist practice, meditation or otherwise, generating a strong positive motivation, it sets your spiritual compass. Prayer is very helpful, but not if it's meaningless ritual. You don't spend a lot of time in meditation. And so what you do develop in meditation feeds and nourishes your experience of the world. And the mind alone determines if your experience is happy or suffering. Just consider that. Your mind alone determines this. At the end of any Buddhist practice, dedication is vital. So dedication is a way you remember the motivation you had at the beginning. You perform that Buddhist activity, you've created positive energy. Now dedication is about rounding up mentally that positive energy and directing it towards achieving your goal. Positive energy is easily lost in our activities of daily living. With some understanding of karma, strong dedication puts this positive energy deep into your mind. And it will stay there and it will flourish at the right time and space. And it will always be beneficial. So dedication allows not just doing the right thing, but you dedicate your energy, you will then benefit from that dedication later. So whenever you think motivation, think dedication. We did a meditation on loving kindness. And afterwards, we looked at how we could enhance that meditation. What could we do? What could we learn? What could we practice that would make that meditation even more meaningful, even more beneficial to yourself and others? And if you remember, we talked about developing knowledge and understanding of the topic of that meditation. Looking at posture, the four types of posture, sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. Making sure that we become familiar with all of them and in what situations each posture is beneficial. We also talked about dealing with distractions and anxiety and excitement and a dull, sleepy mind. If we knew how to do that, that would enhance the meditation even more. And we went into detail about posture. Can you remember? Try to bring to mind the points of posture that we talked about. Try to bring it to mind now. Meditation is a mental process. And so getting the body in the right posture is helpful. But you do what you can do. If you can sit full lotus, wonderful. If you can sit half lotus, very good. But if it's sitting in a chair, if it's lying down on a bed, if it's standing, this is also positive. The Buddha taught these postures. Please review in your mind now analytical meditation. We spent some time in that. Try to bring to mind some of the major points of analytical meditation. Do you remember that it's to do with focus, calm, internal study, using an active mind, using creativity, intelligent thought? It can become insightful, becoming familiar with how things are. It's a mental study that's not bombarded with irritation and interference from the five senses. Analytical meditation has a clear purpose, moving the mind from ignorance to wisdom. The second type of meditation can be called by many names. Some call it concentration, some call it placement meditation, some call it single-pointed concentration. And what this really is, it's a placement of the mind single-pointedly on an idea, on a feeling, on a determination, on any positive insight you gain within that meditation. So while analytical meditation moves the mind from ignorance to wisdom, stability nourishes the positive change in our mind. It causes change. Our ability to concentrate, our ability to be stable, and to place our mind where we want to place it and hold it there, it nourishes the mind, changes it. And it also helps us overcome obscurations to knowledge and understanding this particular type of meditation. It breaks our habitual behavior and our habitual ways of thinking. It challenges long-held beliefs, this ability to focus the mind. With this in mind, analytical meditation and stability, placement meditation, really the wise person uses both in one meditation, both. Then you get the best that you possibly can get from that meditation. Now, remembering the difference, because when the Buddha taught meditation, he taught the importance of shamatha, the ability to focus on an object, hold an object in your mind for hours on end. This ability to hold that concentration allows you to penetrate not only the problem, but penetrate the solution. That ability to focus allows us to see clearly through the veil of confusion over many lifetimes, penetrates that veil, and you start to see things as they really are. Now, stability meditation has a lot of aspects of shamatha, but it's not shamatha, so we need to be clear. Shamatha is a path, a separate path of attention development, starting from not being able to hold the mind on an object for a few seconds until the end of the path, being able to hold on to that object for hours on end. But by building up shamatha, it nourishes and helps with the stability meditation. In many aspects the same. It's like this. If you're doing a university course, let's say on communication, part of that course would be sociology, right? But it's not a sociology degree. But it will use a lot of the aspects of sociology. It's like that with shamatha. Shamatha is like the degree. Very specific, very clear. And placement meditation employs a lot of the qualities of that to try and hold the object. So the more you practice shamatha, the more you can hold the object, the more important stability becomes. So if someone was to say two types of meditation, you would be correct to saying analytical and stable, analytical and placement. Shamatha is a course of study of attention development, which you then employ. It's like a degree in concentration as opposed to just using aspects of it. And so you had some homework, which I know you all did. Right? Absolutely convinced you all did that. So, and so the homework was doing particular meditations to be found in Cathy McDonald's book, How to Meditate, and in the Lam Rim Outlines. So just finish your internal review on how you did in those aspects, that homework. Just finish your meditation with that. And as you finish, dedicate the energy. Don't use prayers, just dedicate the energy towards achieving what you want to achieve. Thank you. So, of course, we did more than that yesterday, but that's the main points. It's the main points. So now it's all fresh in our mind, okay? So can I ask, does anyone have anything to say about the meditations that you did? How did it go? Easy, difficult, useful, not useful? I don't want to put you in groups just now, so one or two feedback would be great.
Hello, it's Amy.
Hiya.
Hiya. I found it quite hard, but I think I'm newer to this than most people in this group. So I started by, where you've uploaded yesterday's content, I used the kind of audio of you to try and get myself into the relaxation. Mm-hmm. Before it, I'd read through the text and I'd made the bullet points to try with the glance meditation.
Okay.
But when I got to that point, I kept kind of coming out of my zone and also I felt like I was rushing, and then realizing that I was rushing and trying to go back, and then thinking, stop thinking so much about rushing. And I did benefit from it, but I think I just need more practice.
You're absolutely right. It's only practice. The relaxation part, if you practice that enough, you can get to I'm not talking about shamatha now, I'm talking about analytical single point of concentration. You can get to the right zone of relaxation within two breaths.
Yeah.
Once you've made mental snapshots, so you do the long process till your body and mind gets used to doing it, then yeah. It becomes shorter and shorter. And because you have the memory of what it's like to be relaxed, you can do it in two breaths. It just takes practice.
Yeah.
Motivation can be very quick. As long as it's heartfelt, that can be very quick. And if you're using the prayers, which I highly recommend, but again, you know, it's beneficial, but not if it's meaningless ritual.
Yeah.
But very quickly that's done. And so then when you get into the meditation, it doesn't take too long, but when you get into the meditation, then you need to know what you're meditating on. So the most ideal way is to study, understand what's going on, got a good running idea of what's going on, and you just go into meditation, you mentally bring up the points.
Yeah.
If you've not done too much study, then reading and making bullet points can be very useful. Yeah. And so you just glance at the bullet points and go back into meditation. If, however, you're not that confident, then it may be a paragraph in a book. It may be, instead of doing the whole meditation, you take one aspect of that meditation and concentrate, read about, just let your glance go onto it, then bring it into mind and meditate on that.
Yeah.
And the next time, take a different aspect. If you do that three or four times and you cover the topic, then if you keep practicing, you can do the whole aspect in one meditation.
Yeah. And that makes sense. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's really only practice, honest.
Yeah. No, I can see that because I have come on from what we did yesterday. But a lot more positive than the worst negative.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you. Anyone else? I mean, I'm assuming everybody did the homework, right? Yeah.
Can I just fill in a wee minute? It's Kathleen.
Okay, where are we now?
Kathleen.
Okay, Kathleen. Hello, hen.
How are you doing?
Oh, no bad. No bad.
I did one of the meditations because I've only had what you gave us online. I've not got the other book, female. I did a meditation where I was doing, bringing myself back and back and back and back to being in the room.
Okay, not sure here. What meditation is this?
The one on rebirth. And what do we think, what it's called?
Was it continuity of mind?
Yes.
Ah, and, okay.
I'm bringing it right back to being in the room.
Uh-huh.
And I started at 20 to 12, and I never come back out of the meditation to 25 past 1.
Wow. So, oh, God.
I didn't want to come back. I'll be honest. I didn't want to come back. It just felt absolutely fabulous.
All right. Okay.
It was absolutely phenomenal.
Good.
Yeah, I was there. Was in the room.
here's the thing. Did you keep your mind on the topic? Or did
I did. No, I did. I kept my mind on the topic. And
did you do glance meditations?
No. No, I didn't.
I just focused
on take myself back to being in the room, thinking about birth and rebirth.
Okay.
You know, that death and dying and rebirth.
Yes.
Bringing it all into focus, and what it made me realise is I've always kind of feared death.
All right.
now I don't.
Oh!
Well, that's the big... And the idea of being reborn, it's just totally uplifted me. The fact that, you know, it's, there isn't an end.
Just, ah, okay.
You know, absolutely.
So the more you study it, the more you study the Dharma, that meditation could change. The thing about it is such a, the wonderful thing to have such a positive meditation for so long,
yeah,
is that it can be very inspiring, but watch out that you don't expect that every time.
Yeah.
And then become disappointed.
Yeah.
Okay, that can happen.
I've had other experiences, Mary, where I've done meditations and not been able to stick and focus to it. And I've had other meditations where I've done healing, like I've been doing healing for people, and being able to be in it and think I'm only there 10 minutes and be there an hour. So
right.
I understand that I won't always have a perfect
Excellent.
But this one was really good. Thank you.
I'm glad. It's good. It's good to have these experiences. It can really kind of buoy you up to the next time. You should always leave a meditation. Lama Yeshe used to say, finish your meditation on a high.
Yeah.
You know, finish your meditation so that you feel you could go back in to do it again. Yeah. Don't push to the end limit. Then yeah. You're reluctant to come back. So finish on a high. That's very good. Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Anyone else? It doesn't have to be like that. It could be anything. Did you all manage to do the meditation? How was the timing? The analysis, the moving the mind. Anyone got anything to say about that?
Hi, here is Marco speaking.
Hello, Marco.
Hello. I have a question.
Okay.
So while I was reading through the points in beginningless mind or other topics, there are some arguments which I cannot relate to.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, what is your advice there?
Okay.
With points that I totally feel like, well, yeah, it's maybe a reason here, but for me, it doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. The purpose of this homework was to get used to the analysis and analytical type meditation. That was the purpose. The purpose was not to teach you about that. So what we all need to do, and we're going to go into this a bit later, is if you're interested, then you would start to do some studying behind each of the topics. You would see what's being said. Meditate, bring your own experience to mind and see how it works. And if there's a discrepancy, looking into that. So it's an idea is analytical study. So of course, we've had many lifetimes thinking about one way. Even if you just think about this lifetime, we have a habit of thinking in a certain way. We've studied to a certain degree. We're not stupid. We're not foolish people, but we have got our own concepts. And so when you're confronted with a concept that's totally out of our understanding, then, of course, you need to study that more from a Buddhist point of view. Not accept it. Never accept it. No. No, you need to do the study. You need to concentrate on it. You need to think about it, discuss. The great Lama Tsongkhapa said from the Galupa school, which I belong to, first listen to many, many, many teachings. Listen to a lot of it. Then reflect on it. Discuss. Read the books. Bring your own ideas. Then meditate. Because when you start to meditate, you want to meditate on positive stuff. But the course we're doing at the moment really is not so much about content, although I'd love to do that with you anytime you can. If we could do a course, that would be nice. It's not the content so much, it's the process of meditation. So you're quite right. If you've never come across these concepts before, or these concepts, some of them really go against the grain, note it. Note it, for sure. it becomes an area for investigation. And it's good that you note it. But okay. But it's the technique of meditation we're learning.
Okay. Yeah, that was very helpful. Thank you very much. Yeah.
You're more than welcome, Marco. More than welcome. Anyone else? Okay. So we talked yesterday about analytical and single-pointed concentration or analytical placement. I think I'd better choose a word here. Let's go with stability, okay? Let's go with analytical instability. So we talked about it. We said what it was for, remembering that analytical is to move the mind from a misunderstanding of a topic towards a wise understanding of a topic. That's its function. Move it. But to change the mind, you need the stability. You need to be able to hold that and focus. That's what changes the mind. So we talked about that. So now we're going to do a meditation. And I'm going to talk you through the meditation. It'd be a guided meditation. But I'm going to let you know which bits are analytical. And I'm going to suggest areas where you do some stability meditation. And when you're learning, guided meditations are fantastic. But when you're doing this on your own, you may choose a different place to do a stability meditation. Do you understand? So although I'm going to lead you on this, it doesn't mean this is the place where you do the stability. It doesn't mean that. It means here's a possible place. Let's try it. Okay? So please, watching your posture. So become interested in how your whole body is responding to each in-breath and out-breath. How your whole body is responding to each in-breath and out-breath. Allowing one part of your mind to gently scan the body, noting any areas of tension, doing nothing about it, simply note, and continue with the scan. And without any effort on your part, without any change in the rhythm of your breath, simply notice that on each out-breath, the tension flows away from the body naturally on each out-breath. And as this tension flows from the body on the out-breath, feel your whole scalp area relax. Generating waves of relaxation, which begin to cascade down the body and through the body, And wherever these waves touch, all tension is eased. All relaxation deepens. And as this occurs, you become aware of how smooth your forehead is. How relaxed your face. How spacious the area around the eyes and between the eyes. Your shoulders have given up the burden and have dropped to a more comfortable position. And as the waves of relaxation continue to flow down the body and through the body, shift your focus now to the movement of the abdomen with the breath. Here is stability, being one with the movement of the abdomen with the breath. This is stabilizing meditation. When you've done that for a while, you begin analytical meditation again. And so you begin to notice that without any effort on your part, without changing the rhythm of your breath, with each in-breath, you feel your mind becoming brighter. You feel your mind becoming sharp and clear. And it's with this relaxed body and clear mind that you generate a strong, positive motivation for this meditation, which will be on compassion. And when you've generated that motivation, try to hold it stable with your mind. And now you ask yourself a question. So, of course, creativity, intelligence is going to play a part here. So this is analytical. And the question is, how long have you struggled to be free of anxiety and dissatisfaction? How long have you struggled with that? How far has my tendency of thinking and behaving always getting in my way? Now, although this is analytical, it's a reappraisal only. Don't get involved in situations. So how long have you struggled to be free of anxiety and dissatisfaction? How have my tendencies got in the way? As a reappraisal. again, analytically, question, how can I free myself of the inner causes of suffering since I have so little control of outer circumstances? How can I free myself of inner causes of suffering since I have little control of outer circumstances? Analytical. And once you've looked into this analytically, develop a strong wish. May I be free of the true causes of sadness and worry. May I be free of that. Allow that yearning to develop. Imagine what it would be like to be free of pointless craving, pointless hostility and conflict. How wonderful that would be. How wonderful if I could replace that with serenity and the joy of a balanced mind, which is in tune with reality. Make that yearning as strong as you can. And when it is as strong as you can make it, let go of all mental discussion and with stability, try to hold that yearning in your mind. Focus. When you're focusing, if your mind wanders, just notice it's wandered and gently bring it back. It doesn't matter how often you do this. May I be free of this sadness. May I have the serenity and joy of a balanced mind. Make it strong. Focus. And if you continue to perhaps lose your concentration, not to worry, you continue with the meditation. So analytically, please attend to a loved one. Think of a loved one who is suffering physical, psychological distress. Bring them to mind. Be clear of what they're suffering from. Naturally, your own internal love and compassionate heart begins to emerge. Make a strong wish. May you be free from suffering and its causes. May you be free. And imagine that that person immediately finds freedom and relief that they need to lead a happy, meaningful life. Imagine it's happening right now. And once you see that person free in your mind, make that stable meditation, hold it, focus on that freedom that you've given to that individual. Focus. And the mind will wander. You just notice it's wandering, you bring it back in focus. But if you bring the mind back and there's very little there to focus on, continue with the meditation. You've had this strong, compassionate thought for one person. Now begin to broaden your scope of awareness. Spread your awareness to the world. Attend to those who are suffering physically, socially, psychologically. All of them deserve your compassion. Embrace mentally all these sentient beings. Strongly wish, may we all be free of suffering and the true causes of suffering. May we all help each other. May we all help end each other's pain. And when that feeling is as strong as you can make it, let go of mental discussion and hold that feeling stable. Noticing when the mind wanders, bringing it back to that stable wish. And when that's no longer working, continue with the meditation. May I develop all the internal conditions needed to help others without exception. May I develop all the internal conditions I would need in order to benefit others. Make that feeling strong. Use your imagination. Make it strong. See it happening. Then let go of mental talk and hold that feeling in your mind without distraction. Now, instead of ending the meditation, if you're doing this at home, you may want to reflect on one or two points you've covered that mean more to you, that have triggered a more positive action in your mind. So bring them to mind now. What part of this meditation meant more to you than anything else? Bring it to mind. Focus. as you're ending the meditation, mentally gather all that positive energy. Remember your motivation and direct that positive energy towards achieving your motivation. See it happening. And then if you're familiar with the prayer, you would do a short dedication prayer. Thank you. Okay. Right, so we're going to do some group work now, and because we're taking it step by step, what I really want you to discuss is how clear is it to you now in one meditation, the analytical aspects and the stability aspects? Can you see how they work together? Can you see that if you were leading yourself in this meditation, you may choose a different aspect to stop and spend more time on the stability? So it's really about, can you see how analytical meditation and stability work hand in hand for moving the mind and changing the mind? Thank you. So welcome back. Arguably, learning to work with analytical instability, arguably, is one of the most important skills that you could achieve in meditation. It'll take you very far if you get the hang of it. So I'm interested to hear how that meditation, now I know it was a bit awkward because I would say this is analytical and this is stability, but it's only for teaching. But I'm interested to hear, you know, how you're getting on, how this idea of employing both together enhances the meditation. So any feedback you give me, I would appreciate. So please go ahead.
Lindsay's hands up. Go for it, Lindsay.
Hi, Ben Mary. I think we said it was great to have a reminder that it's not just two chunks, as in analytical and then focused, that you can keep going back between the two.
Yes.
And that was really helpful to just be reminded of that. We both went, yeah, we remember that, but we've forgotten it, you know. it's got to be two chunks.
Why though, Lindsay? Mostly because people do too much led meditation.
Yes.
Someone's leading you in meditation, they never say this is analytical, this is stability. No. Sometimes maybe towards the end, one or two might do it, but mostly they won't. They'll give you the main points. And then they're expecting you to do that. But if you're relying, you see, it's good to have led meditation. I'm not saying it's not, but it's not the end practice. The end practice is do it yourself and then choosing where you stop.
Yes, because I think from experience this morning, it was, well, I've done the analytical part, but am I at the right bit now to have a little stop? Is it correct where I am now? Or should I just keep going a bit longer? And if I go a bit longer, is that going to be a more beneficial place to stop? So thank you. That was helpful. And the other thing that occurred to me was the going back one, which was to use the technique of, because I found I was sitting and enjoying having memories. So particular, I don't know, a holiday or something. So to use the technique that I learned with David Midgley on one of his courses recently, which was to go yesterday, last week, last month, last year.
Okay.
And that gave me a real structure to going back.
Excellent. Good.
So we discussed that as well.
There are many ones, but that's a very good one for the whole purpose of that is not to become involved in the meditation.
Yes.
That's the whole thing. So whatever you do to stop yourself becoming involved in the memory,
yes,
interacting with it, it's an appraisal only. Yeah.
That's why I needed that one, because I would have just sat and thought about a particular period in my life for a couple of hours, actually, if I'd had the chance.
Mm-hmm.
good and good bad, you can, yeah, so, good. Yeah. Anyway, that's me, so I'll give somebody else a chance.
Thank you, Lindsay. Great.
I think Carol and Rowena had their hand up, I think.
Okay, Carolina, trying to catch you now. Hello.
Hello. Are you going first? Well, we were discussing in our group and
Carol, it's hard to hear you. Could you sit nearer the mic, please?
Sure. Is that better?
Yeah.
Slightly.
Okay, I'll keep it brief. Just to say that I think this technique of combining the two is something that has been a revelation for me, because nobody, as you just said, nobody has ever kind of said you can put them together. And so it's been incredibly useful. And all the meditations that we've done in this very short space of time have been really different. They've been really rich. And it's just really useful to hear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think, again, I think the reason people don't point this out is because there's a very strong idea of shamatha, sometimes talked about as concentration and analytical. See, and the idea of the thing I keep saying, I know, but shamatha is what the Buddha was talking about. This developing this power of concentration, but that's an additional path. But there are skills involved in that which you could use within analytical meditation. And the more, and you can do it without doing shamatha, but the more you learn about shamatha, the skills automatically go into that. So to be able to go back and forward, you're still meditating, you're just using a different type of meditation. And the more you use that, the easier, when you start to develop shamatha, the whole concept becomes much easier. But remember what His Holiness said, analytical meditation for a beginner, or someone who feels they're a beginner, especially in learning about the Dharma, because is really of prime importance. But if you can do both and you learn early on, it pays great dividends. I'm glad you found it useful. And it was clear. You felt clear. Good. Good. Thank you. Anyone else?
Merit, Dan.
Yes, hi Dan.
I have this morning when I did continuity of mind.
Right.
When I was trying to hold almost the conclusions of the whole exercise.
Yes.
I felt I was then holding a concept in my mind, and I understood it having thought back in time and forward in time. When we just did the recent meditation that you've done, and I'm concentrating on compassion, that's sort of holding a feeling in my mind rather than a concept. And should I be holding the sort of result of my analysis, the analytical part? And when I get to a point where I think, well, I understand that now, or I want to feel that now, is that what I then try to hold?
So what you're identifying here is really, could be said to be the most difficult aspect. When do I stop? And this is why I said right at the very beginning, because analytical moves the mind from ignorance to wisdom, in that journey, there may be something that comes up that is much more positive for you than you were at the beginning. And it could be a feeling of, oh my God, this is really important. I didn't understand. And as soon as that comes, that's positive. Let everything else go. Hold that. Your mind will wander, bring it back. And one time when you bring it back, there's nothing to look at. Do you know what I mean? So you go on with the meditation. And suddenly, this deep, whatever you're talking about, perhaps this deep feeling of compassion arises from what you're doing. At that moment, stop, focus. The mind moves, you bring it back. And one of the times you bring it back, if it's not there, continue with the meditation. Now, you may go through the whole meditation and never feel that. All your emphasis is on the analysis. There's no problem with that. That's okay. But if a positive change arises in your mind, and it could be a joyful feeling, it could be a strong determination, it could be an idea that this is really important. I didn't realize how important this was. It could be just that. Focus. It could be a feeling, it could be a concept. Don't worry about concepts. Never worry about that. Concepts are neither good or bad. They disappear the more you develop your mind. So don't worry about that. So whatever comes up that's positive, and two people doing the same meditation, one will come with a real joy in it. Stay with that. The other person comes, is really got, oh my God, this is important. I really need to read this more. I need to study this more. That feeling, I need to look into this deeper. Hold it. And when you're doing one day, a feeling might come. A second day, doing the same meditation, a strong determination will come. Analysis is moving the mind towards wisdom. And in that movement, it stirs up the mind. And something positive like joy or determination or a deep yearning to continue, something comes up. Don't let that pass. Stay with it.
That's very helpful, really. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. Anyone else? This is the most important part. So anything you've got, you know, any difficulty or anything you want to say, this is the space to do it. Not easy to get people to teach that. Yes.
Yeah. Hello, Mary.
Hi, Anne.
It's Lynn. I just wanted to say, to following on from what you were saying to Dan, because I found that really useful, because I think sometimes in the past I have inadvertently actually moved from analytical to stability and back again, just because it felt logical, but I didn't really know until hearing what you've been saying over these last few sessions that that was what I was doing. So I think it's marvellous that you've helped me work out what's going on, because it feels like you've sort of given me permission to do that. I mean, I don't always do it, but I recognise now that I have sometimes.
Yeah, it's just you don't have a lot of teaching on this. This is...
No.
I had teaching on it. I mean, I had teaching on this. I would have teaching you if I hadn't. But it's... It's if you read around the topic, it's almost implied. Much better, I think, to make it explicit.
Yeah.
See it for what it is. But remember, don't expect a strong determination, a feeling of joy. If all you do for weeks on end is just analytical, that'll pay dividends. That'll pay dividends. Don't worry about, oh, I didn't get a stability there. Don't worry about that. But when it occurs, take full advantage of it. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mary Vina has posted a question. When doing placement, should you always imagine the positive outcome realized?
So when you decide to do placement, you've already come to an You've already come to an idea. You've already come to a joy. You've already come to some sort of insight, some determination. So it's not as if I'll stop here, I'll pile on the, see myself, this all happening, and then focus. That's bringing more analytical into it. It's stability and placement is really about being aware of what's happening in the mind in relation to the topic. So you don't have to do any more analysis or, well, maybe I should make it like this or that. No, just recognize the positivity that comes up, however it presents itself, and focus. If in that whole thing, there is one thing that you would like to see happening, make that an analytical and single pointed concentration on its own. Make that a meditation. So it's really about being aware, recognizing this development in your mind as you progress along the analysis, it will be positive. If it feels positive, don't even think about it. Don't think about making it more so, seeing it happening. Don't think of anything like that. Let all that go and simply hold the feeling, the determination, the insight. Everything else is analytical. And it's good to really get that right, because when you start to understand and start to practice shamatha, that has to be clear. That has to be clear. So that's why we're spending time on it at the moment, because it's almost counterintuitive. Yeah. But then, hey, when I first came across Buddha Dharma, I thought the whole thing was counterintuitive. So just having one or two things is okay. I hope that's clear, Veena. Anyone else?
Hi, it's Rowena.
Hi, Rowena.
I just wanted to say just such a huge thank you, because nobody, well, I've not heard, people are probably, teachers have probably said it before, but I've not heard it before, and I think there's a difference for me there, that, you know, it, getting to a point where it triggers a positive feeling is the point that you then becomes concentration. I had no idea. So it's a real eureka moment, and thank you for it.
You're welcome. But again, I think it's because the two types of meditation are talking about shamatha or concentration and analytical. Often not making use of the skills of focus and placement. So when they say there are two types of meditation, sometimes in the books they say that's analytical and stability. Really what they, generally speaking, with the Buddha, it really is analytical and shamatha, deep concentration. So what I'm talking about now is understand, and I've been taught this, so I'm not, this is not a Maryism, right? This is that you can get a hint of what that stability can lead to by doing this. And if you do this just within, you know, flowing, it gives you energy, and you can see the benefit of developing shamatha earlier. Analytical stuff moves the mind, but being able to focus changes it.
Yeah.
I'm glad. Positive. That's marvelous. Anyone else? For some people, there may be some of you thinking, I just found it too difficult. Don't, if that's the case, don't worry. Just don't, it's only practice, really. And remember, when you're doing this, especially when you're learning, there's nothing to stop you looking at a meditation and deciding beforehand, I'm going to do this meditation and I'm going to stop here and I'm going to feel joy, right? When you're learning, it doesn't matter that it's a wee bit artificial. When you're learning, because what you're doing now is getting comfortable with different types of meditation. With being comfortable becomes confidence. So there's nothing to stop you seeing a meditation written down on compassion, reading through it, saying, here's where I want to stop. Here's where I want to feel compassion. Here's where I want to feel joy. Here's where I want to feel determination. Do it beforehand, if it helps. And then when you're doing the meditation, stop, let that determination develop, yes, focus, then move on with the rest. That will give you confidence. So that when you do the meditation again, you'll start to be aware of the mind changing. And then you're confident to stop, hold it, then move on. Nothing to stop you doing that. Nothing wrong with being a wee bit artificial when you're learning something. Yes. Okay. Anyone else? No? Okay. So what I'd like to do now is you all have, or I was assured that you would all have, let's see, this contents page of the Lamrim outlines. It's always difficult when you've got a back screen. It's the contents page. It will come up on the screen in a minute. I really would like you to bring that in front of you now. If you've got it on a different device, that's fine. If you've been taught by me before, you'll have the handout. So it's the contents page of the Lamrim. And if you could just read through it quickly. Okay. So we'll get rid of that now. Because what we've dealt with so far is the why of meditation, a lot of the points of how to meditate, and now I want to think about what we meditate on. Okay? That's the next part. What is it we meditate on? Now, with the Dharma, with the Buddha Dharma, all the different types of Buddhism around the place, there is a smorgasbord of different teachings. A plethora of meditations. A huge variety of methods of teachings. Different types of teachers giving different types of teachings. Some of these will tell you they're the best, they're the greatest, they're secret, or let's say you only need this, or if you do this, it's a shortcut. You get all that, don't you? Because it's such a variety. Now, because there's so much out there taught by different types of teachers from different schools, it can be very confusing. Not only confusing to people, it can be disturbing, especially if you latch on to one thing without really understanding, and then you're introduced to another way of looking at it. That can disturb your mind because of the variety. And if you don't understand the overview of the Dharma, how things work, then really what can happen is it can foster a dependency on only one way of doing something in the Dharma. Doing that without a grounding in Buddha Dharma can be damaging. If you don't give yourself a grounding in the Dharma, then the result can be that really something else, whether it's a school, whether it's a teacher, has narrowed your choice of different types of teachings. And if you allow someone to narrow your choice, you hand over control. Not just control over what you learn, but the direction of your learning. And most important of all, you may not even notice. It is extremely important, if you want to walk this path, is that you learn and meditate on a trustworthy program that will take you all the way through the Buddha Dharma, showing you each of the different methods, how it links one into another, showing you what the end result is, clearly defining your practice and what you're aiming for. Now, this program is available in many schools. Our problem is that we tend to pick and mix. You honestly are better off choosing one program, sticking to it until you get the complete picture. Once you have the complete picture, it's actually quite difficult to actually get misled. If you have a complete picture of the Buddha Dharma, I don't mean you know everything, you have the picture, then it's different to be misled. And there's some strange people out there. Teachers, gurus, lamas are vitally important in the Dharma, vitally important. You couldn't be where you are without your teacher, but you walk the path. And if you walk the path, you need to be in control. Now, all schools have a program that will do this. In my school, which is the Galupa School, the trusted structure for providing an in-depth view of the whole of the Buddha Dharma is called the Lam Rim. The Lam Rim, the path of enlightenment, steps on the path to enlightenment. Lam Rim is so important that it's actually in all schools of Tibetan Buddhism. All schools. But in the Galupa school, it has been developed in its entirety. In its entirety. And the Galupa school is the only school that has the Lam Rim in its entirety. And that's the Lam Rim that was taught by Lama Atitcha and expanded on by Lama Tsongkhapa, the head of the Galupa school. Now, if you go to another school, they will present you with a program. All good schools do that from beginning to end. What I'm going to suggest here is related to my own school. So previous to what I've said, going to one teacher for one thing and another teacher to another can be very disturbing and very confusing. The language code in different schools is different. It can be different. Their premise, although they all lead to enlightenment, that's for sure. They all lead to enlightenment, certainly the four schools of Tibetan Buddhism. But they appeal to certain types of people. That's why there's different schools. So what I'm going to present to you now as an overview of the Buddhist path is the Galupa presentation. Okay? Any questions about that so far? Can you see my point that it could be confusing unless you get an overview? You'd all look at me. It can be confusing. Okay. If you can look at that handout, if you've got the handout or you've got it on a device, I'm assuming you do, is that right? Yeah, okay. Please have a look at it. So this is the contents page of the outlines of the Lam Rim. If you get a chance to study the Lam Rim, that's wonderful. We're not studying it, but I want to give you this overview. If you look at the contents page, what you're seeing here is a complete presentation of all Buddhist practices, all of them. They have benefits. This particular presentation has benefits because it's quite clear. It's quite easy to put into practice. All of it is like personal advice to the individual. And it's based on the premise of the Galupa way of learning, which is listening to teachings, studying, discussing, reflecting, then meditating. That's the sequence. In the Galupa school, we value people meditating on what is reasonable. So if we look, one of the things you can look at here is, can you see what it says? Small capable being, medium capable being, great capable being. Can you see that? Yeah? Okay. Under each heading are a set of topics which you'd encourage to listen to teachings on, study, and meditate. Each of these areas are dependent on motivation. And so the small capable being, this is a being that really says, this life is full of suffering. My motivation is next time round to have a better rebirth. There is nothing wrong with that motivation. In fact, it sounds very reasonable to me. But here's what Lama Atitcha and Lama Tsongkhapa are saying. They're saying, if you're going to do that, understanding the perfect human rebirth, working, identifying and working with the eight worldly concerns, impermanence, understand that completely. Understand the death process. Refuge, karma. So everything that's under the small capable being, this is what's really needed for a better rebirth. Now, if you're looking at the medium capable being, this is someone with the motivation that says, even if I get a better rebirth next time, still it's full of suffering. This is samsara. So really what I want to do is I want to be off the wheel of suffering. I want to be totally liberated. And so this being, on top of all the topics and meditations and realizations of the small capable being, adds these other topics and these other experiences from the medium being. Then you look at the great capable being, and this is a being that says, a better rebirth is no good to me, still suffering. And even if I come off the wheel of suffering, it's just me that's come off. What about everybody else? The person of a great capable is really someone who's saying, I will not leave anyone else behind. Yeah. Not only do I want liberation and enlightenment, I want it for everyone else. So there are different motivations. Now, sometimes when you listen to this, as I did when I first heard it, you look at it and you think, where am I on this scale? And you look at that and you think, well, I'm kind of medium towards great. You know, that's what we tend to think, right? But what you're really looking at here is a progression of mental development, which is then shows in our behavior and our attitudes. So we're all really small beings aiming towards medium sign, aiming towards great capacity. And although it's presented like this, it's presented linearly like this simply as a way of learning, but in actuality, it's an organic process. It's an organic process. You go over this time and time again, going deeper. And the more you learn about one thing, the deeper something else becomes. Each one of these topics informs the previous and the next topic. It all does that. So although it's presented as individual topics, it's not really like that. Rowena, Venerable Rubina, she talks about it like this. She says, small capacity beings, that's like people going to primary school in Dharma, the primary school of the Dharma. Then she says, medium capable beings are like people who go to college. And then people with great capacity are the people who go to university. That's what she says. So looking at it like that becomes interesting. Within this, the whole path of method and wisdom is laid clear, contains all the Four Noble Truths. If you were to divide the whole of the Buddha Dharma into three parts, it would be ethics, concentration, and wisdom. It's all there. Ethics, why? Not because we're nice little Buddhists. Ethics, morality, calms the mind. If you live in morality, you have a calm mind. If you have a calm mind, then you can develop concentration. If you don't have success in concentration, just small success is often because we haven't got the ethics right. So ethics and morality calm the mind. Once the mind is calm or calmer, you've got a high chance of developing concentration. What do you do with this concentration? If you just leave it at concentration, okay, but no real benefit. With this concentration, you penetrate the nature of reality. That's worth it. You develop your concentration so you penetrate the nature of reality and you see things as they are. Not the fantasy that you live. Buddha Dharma says that we live in a kind of fantasy. We make up things. It's kind of delusional. But if you have developed a strong mind, a concentrated mind, you can then put in front of that mind something of benefit. So you put in front of that mind bodhicitta, the mind of bodhicitta. You put in front of that concentration the nature of reality, emptiness, and you penetrate it. And all of this is leading up to that. All of it is leading up to developing the heart that wants to benefit all sentient beings without exception. All of this is leading up to seeing things as they really are. All of it. if the whole of the Buddha Dharma was put into method and wisdom, apart from emptiness, the nature of reality, everything else in that list is method. Everything, including bodhicitta, it's method. All of it to develop our mind in order to penetrate the nature of reality, emptiness. That's what that's there. And it starts understanding that the life that we have is so precious. We can use this mind now. Why? Because the Dharma says we're in bondage. We're in bondage. And this path takes you to freedom. This is a path to freedom in the Dharma. This path clearly shows you that the bond that we have is clearly the fact that we don't understand the suffering of ourselves and others. We believe suffering situations are happiness. We mislabel it. We see disturbing emotions as being real and happy. And most importantly, we see things that have no self, no permanent entity. We see these things as having a self and a permanent entity. That's the cords. They're the cords that bind us. This path is developed in such a way to break those and make you free. Now, let's say, but again, within this, it is assuming this was written really by Buddhists for Buddhists, often by monks for monks. So there's a lot of assumptions here. And one of the assumptions here is beginning this mind and reincarnation. That's taken as read. You don't have to believe it. You have to listen to the teachings, study, reflect, meditate, and come to your conclusion. Nothing in Dharma is a dogma, nothing. So beginning this mind and reincarnation, you need to discover this. It invites you, this path invites you to kind of explore in depth your human condition. It's asking you to be honest with yourself and explore it. It challenges everything that we hold dear. Our innate beliefs, our habits, our concepts and our behavior. Now, imagine you do a course. Now, the courses on Lambrin could be anything as long as a month. some people do it for 2 weeks, some people do it for 10 days, some people do it for, I've done a long weekend on it, but you do it time and time again until you have that good overview. If you've got a good overview, then you look at things and you start hearing about things like Dzogchen, and you start hearing about things like Vipassana. Someone asked me about yesterday about Vipassana. If you understand the overview and you decide, oh, that Vipassana sounds interesting, where does that fit in here? Because if this is as I'm telling you, then it has to be here somewhere. Now, Vipassana really is about seeing things as they really are. It's called special insight. So the mind of shamatha cultivates the mind. It's then applied in Vipassana. What's all that about? It's asking, Vipassana is special insight. It's looking into the reality of the body, the reality of feelings, the reality of mental states. It looks at all phenomena. So where would that fit in here? If someone starts teaching you about Vipassana, you can see very clearly that in the great capable being, you've got shamatha and calm abiding, and you've got emptiness. Both of those together, if you've studied that to any degree, will give you a clear insight on Vipassana. It doesn't teach you about Vipassana, but you'll see where Vipassana sits in. And so with confidence, you can do a decent course on Vipassana. You don't suddenly see that as overriding everything else. You see where it fits into the Dharma. And that's valuable. That's very valuable. Then you hear teachings on Dzogchen. You know, people say, oh, this is really special. Fine. If you've done the overview here, where does Dzogchen fit into here? Somebody was asking yesterday about Dzogchen. So Dzogchen really is about mind. it's really about the Lama introducing you to the nature of your mind. In the Galupa, we spend to be more on the Mahamudra, which is really about discovering the nature of your mind. But if you know that, you look at this, where does that fit in? And you can find it. Oh, yes. Really. Again, you've got mind up here. Okay. You understand a bit about karma, so you know why your mind is a wee bit blocked in that way. You understand the nature of suffering. You understand that you've got a precious human rebirth that allows you to do that. And with shamatha and realization of the nature of reality, this is another way of exploring those topics. I know I'm harping on about this, but it can be confusing. If you want to stop that confusion, learn the structure that covers the whole path. Then when you start to do other aspects, you see where it fits in. And when somebody says to you, this is the most important, this is the greatest, this is the best, this is a shortcut, then you've got something to question them with. I personally think everybody should learn the Lama. Of course I would, because I'm Galuk. That's the structure. That's our trusted structure. It's never let me down. It's not for everybody. There might be different programs, but whatever program you choose, make sure it has all the content in it. So that whatever comes up, whatever one teacher says, whatever course is promoted over another, you know where it fits in. Any questions about that? So worst thing you can say as a teacher, by the way, any questions? But there you go. We're getting to the end, so. Maybe just think about it, okay? It's just that it's such a huge thing asking us to look at life differently. You know, it's a big ask. So it needs mental changes, and you don't hand that over to anyone else unless you know, you're great confidence. What gives you confidence? Learn the structure. Okay, maybe think about it. We can check tomorrow. Homework. Right. Pen and paper to the ready. Excellent. There are two meditations I'd like you to attempt tomorrow. Or is it? Yes, tomorrow. One is in Kathleen McDonald's book, How to Meditate. And it's called Meditation on the Breath. Meditation on the Breath. That's page 37 to 41. Now, I've asked you, this one I've chosen because there's more stabilizing than analytical. There's both, but there's a heavy emphasis on stability. So practice that. See if you can, in your mind, be very clear which is the analytical part, which is the stable, and start to feel confident moving backwards and forward. The other one is in the outlines, the Lamrim outlines. And that's what's called the eight worldly dharmas. The eight worldly dharmas, page 18 to 22. Because here, it's the same as in Buddhist time. We spend our time doing so many things. Very little time for dharma. Even in Buddhist time, same thing. So meditating on the eight worldly dharmas, not only is it wonderful teaching about and recognizing and being honest about how we spend our time, but there's also areas there that you will recognize that will ring true more than others. And when that does, stabilize on it. Bring it to mind, stabilize on it. So those are the two meditations I'd like you to do. So tomorrow is Monday. So I'm teaching tomorrow 10 till 2. Now, you can do that tonight if you wish, but, you know, see how it goes. See how it goes. Or it could be for Monday. Personally, do it when you can. You know, I'd be doing it tonight and tomorrow as well. So tomorrow is Monday, so I'm teaching from 10 to 12, yes. After. Listen, thanks very much for staying with me. I hope I haven't ranted too much. My only aim really is for you to feel confident. Be courageous, be confident. Make your choices, whatever choices you make, coming from a really good basis. Really learn the Dharma. Be your own teacher. Teachers are important, very. But you walk the path, nobody else. Thank you so much. Any final questions before we do the conclusion prayer? No? Okay, so let's do the dedication. So remembering the motivation that we had at the beginning, between then and now, so much positive energy, so few people even thinking this way. Now we mentally gather up that and direct it in your dedication towards achieving what you were motivating for. So just do that mentally now before we do the prayers. Gather it up. It's positive. You want to feel the benefit of this in the future. So direct it towards achieving. You can put the dedication prayer back up. So we do this. May whatever virtues I have collected benefit the teachings of all transmigratory beings. And in particular, may it cause the essence of perfect, pure Losang Drapa's teachings to shine forever. Thank you.